So thank you for the organizer for the invitation. Since I was actually given the test to talk about the latest QCD calculation on the nuclear matrix phenomenon related to beta decay. The title is so long, and so it got truncated on the web page, but I thought, hey, it's actually quite a coincidence that I just rephrase a little bit about the precision neutron decay matrix phenomenon. And for those who have known our calculations, this doesn't work. Okay. So it's actually to be one of the new collaborations that's dedicated to providing precision calculations involving the neutron decay matrix phenomenon. And so here are some of the current members and past members, and one of the non-latest person here. And so the whole collaboration was inspired by a lot of beautiful, promising ultra-cold neutron experiment that's taking place in Los Alamos. So there's a big support coming to the laboratory. So we have a lot of Los Alamos members here. And the small collaborations, and we are trying to do a better calculation than what's been done before. So we are here, we are all excited about trying to find out what the new phases are. And of course, the LHC is one of the natural spotlight that people have been looking for the new physics. And so it got this great potential to directly look for beyond the model particles. And one way latest QCD can contribute is to provide a better pattern distribution function that have been input as a background for the model. So if we can tighten up the uncertainty in the student model, then we would have a better say to see what the new physics is there or isn't. So this is one of the direction one could go from the latest QCD calculation. If any of you are interested, I would be happy to talk to you about during the break. And of course, another direction is that we have so many low energy of precision frontier type experiments that we are constraining the beyond student model scenario from many, many different constraints. And you heard a lot of this have been covered in this workshop already. And for those who have missed it, usually you need a time machine to go back to hear the earlier great talk, but here you can just go online and listen, click on the link to see a lot of interesting discussion throughout the week. And today here, I was just going to focus a little bit on the neutron beta decay. And here, this is just a picture of the Los Alamos ultra-cold center. That's one of the experiments that inspired us to start the calculation. So we are interested in new physics at the TeV scale. So assuming they are something like that, and then your Lagrangian or the Snell model will modify by some of the new particles, and in the intermediate energy scale, they can actually write down as some kind of effective operators multiplied by some coupling constant. And this coupling constant will be very similar than the Fermi's theory that will tell you the energy scale of the new particle, if there's any. And if you try to test such a theory at a lower energy, say about GeV or lower, then there are hadronic contribution coming in that require non-perturbative QCD calculation. Here's an example of the coupling that could come in from scalar and tensor charges. And this is what we are trying to do in the latest QCD calculation with precision control. So one of the particular interaction we are interested in looking at in addition to the standard model V-A interactions is some of the other kind of new interaction that could come in potentially from scalar, tensor, super scalar, and so on. But some of the little birds in laboratory tell us that they can measure some of the fierce interference trend and neutrino asymmetry beta decay to certain precisions that have very great potential of constraining the new physics scenarios. And so in these two cases, that the tensor and scalar effective interaction is the dominant cases. And so and this is why we were looking at the scalar and tensor in nucleon charges and providing the experiment, then providing us to the precision measurement deviation from the standard model measurement to 10 to the minus 3 magnitude or certain order, then we will be able to reverse engineering to get a window of how big the magnitude of this coupling that will tell us the new energy, new particle scales. And so to do so, we require precision latent calculation inputs. That means that we have to have all systematic control. So, and the experiment at the Los Alamos is not the only one. There are certain promising experiments around the world in Oak Ridge, maybe even Munich, I don't know. And even SIMPA could potentially be able to pull certain parameter, use them as a constraint, and we can combine them with the latest QCD result as well. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit on what we do on the latest, and especially with, since I'm sandwiched between experiment at all, I will tell you a little bit more on the systematics that we have been heard so much complain about, and you understand that as a theorist, we actually suffer a lot more. And also, then I will just briefly show you some of the results we have for the scalar and tensor and H-shell, and a little bit on some of my comments on what they mean. So we all know that you can take the standard model Lagrangian to go. And so what we try to do on the latest, basically we are trying to do this calculation in a four-dimensional space-time. So it's we rotate them to Euclidean space, so everything is real, you don't get cancellation on the computer, and we try to fit our calculation on supercomputer. So that what's different from the regular QCD is usually the parameter that we play around, so we sometimes make it heavier because it's computational cheaper to do. And we also have this scale of latent spacing and the finite sex effect. By the end of the day, we want to measure our physics is not affected by these two parameters as well. And so you see a lot of latest QCD calculations have been tried to address to push the quantum mass to the physical one, but not many people have actually tried to do the other two extrapolation, and that's what we try to address as well. And so basically what we do is we create this virtual QCD wall, and we try to put the proton and neutron on in the computer, and then we do the measurement over and over again. So in some sense that we are kind of a latest experimentalist in a way. And so this theory, as many of you know, was born before I was born, but we haven't really solved the QCD yet. And there have been a lot of limitations due to the computational resources. And just to give you, if you have young folks in the audience, just give you an idea, this is the game, that's the state of the art game in the 80s. And that's like you play on a giant supercomputer, desktop. I forgot, this is like one of those mouse games you do up and down. And this is probably what's played in your teenager's iPhone these days. You have this 3D graphic and all that. So I just kind of just gave you an idea, there's a lot of progress having done. Be able to be done. The problem we are able to solve from very small 4Q, 4 to the 4 latency today, people are doing like hundreds or something. It's a tremendous progress. And also, we don't usually do this alone, obviously. There are always smarter ways to do a smarter algorithm. Then you can bring down the magnitude or speed up by another magnitude. So calculation you have to done in 10 years. If you have good, smart way of doing that, you could possibly do it in a year. And there's a lot of collaboration with applying math science of engineers and people in different departments outside physics, and they also bring a lot of new ideas. And as a result, that today, as you heard from Dina's talk, there are actually a lot of physical parameter examples. And now we just need to do precision measurement on those. And so the latest QCD calculation have been considered standard model input in mesonic sectors that many people have been using them in the flavor world or in the particle physics community. So this is not really new. For example, that this is a slide I steal from Aida's talk from the INT workshop last year. And the mesonic quantity have been able to calculate up to great precision. And you can see here's the 1% mark. So a lot of calculation be able to done below 0.5%. And so we just start to do the same thing with the nucleon, which is a little bit harder. And it's hard because we have this noise issue that a couple of speakers mentioned it yesterday. The signals actually get worse as it goes to larger Euclidean time. And it also gets a lot worse when you try to do lighter quantum masses. As you get closer to the physical quantum masses, the signal gets worse. And they also increase as the number of quarks in your system. So doing nucleons hard, doing nuclei will be another magnitude harder and so on. So you can extrapolate from that. And so that's a big issue we had to live with. And they are, of course, they are this excited state contamination. The pion is 140, the next excited state is over 1G. Unlike nucleon, it's almost 1G, and the next excited state, if it's a single state or some complicated state, it's not far away. So you have to really put those into consideration when we do the calculation. And it's really hard to extrapolate in terms of what's the chiral effective field theory you to use to guide us to do the extrapolation. In the mesonic communities, there's this well-defined, there's not as many low energy constants, you can fit them very well, and you can even reverse engineering to test the chiral perturbation theory these days. But to do the simple nuclear mass extrapolation, some of the KPT doesn't really describe it well, and a few people who have done this calculation for a long time just decide to take a ruler and extrapolate instead. But anyway, so it's a hard problem, and it might become less an issue as we have more and more physical pion mass examples, but this is still ongoing. And lastly, we need a much larger volume because the nucleon has, we need much bigger volume to do the calculation, and sometimes it's not being generated by our mesonic colony. We tend to share the QCD vacuum, so that could be a problem. And we also need much higher statistics to overcome some of those noise issues or to overcome some of the contamination issue. So I will show you a little bit how all these different problems that can actually entangle in some way that making the GA to 1% is a very hard problem. And we also need a much longer trajectory, so to make sure that our QCD vacuum is not stuck in some unrealistic local minima, and so to make sure they are really what the QCD vacuum is supposed to be. So, and this can sometimes also be a problem. And so just to try to emphasize that today a lot of nuclear related calculation, high statistics is very important. And so just to emphasize that if you're not familiar with this QCD calculation, but many people have very familiar with a mysterious X750 state and how that disappears when you have more statistics. So it's the same thing we had to be very careful in the latest QCD calculation. Therefore, you have to be really careful. Even though we know how to do this calculation for a long time, there are a lot of systematics that become a problem when you go to more precision calculations. And so I want to make sure you're actually getting a real QCD number instead of being bitten by the monster in the latest. So how do you do the latest QCD calculation? First, we pick some kind of vacuums. And because we have this discretized space-time, we have certain freedom to write down the gauge action and fermion action, not go to the same continuum limit that you are familiar with. So we can actually vary them, and we tend to vary them depends on what kind of quantity we care about. If you care about chiral symmetry, you have an action that preserves chiral symmetry on finite A. But if you don't care, then you can do something cheaper, and then you choose a different action. So it depends on what you do. You can pick different flavor. You can have up-down quad in your QCD vacuum, or 2+1 up-down quad strange, or even the charm degree of freedom in your QCD vacuum. And then you try to construct it. You calculate the quad correlate propagators, which involve doing a giant inversion or a large matrix. This is another significant resources we need to do the calculation. And once you have that, you try to construct a proton or neutron in this case, and then they decay in annihilate another space-time, Euclidean space-time, and you try to do them, try to measure it before it dies. And you can put in various different plots in the middle, and they will correspond to different type of physics. And so once you have these correlators, and then you need to start to analyze them. And like I say, this is when the excited state that can become tricky. And so you do your quantum mechanics, you're given a certain quantum numbers to say spin 1/2, then you can actually couple to all the possible state 1/2 of the radio excited states. And so when you do the couplings, this can come up with multiple terms, and then you have to do that in your analysis. And remember, this is all Euclidean time, so that the signal actually decay. You have to capture the signal before you'll be able to distinguish the one state from the other. So it's a non-trivial thing. So when if you have a good tuning, you can try to tune your operator on cover mostly with the ground state, not so much with the excited state. If you can design your operator to do so, then you can say, hey, maybe I don't have to worry about all these extra blue and purple terms. I just have this ground state, and then the coupling I can recover easily. And sometimes you're not always so lucky, or you want to do your calculation to have form better, for example, so you don't want to completely excluded all the possible higher energy in your system, and then you had to put in all these second terms. Sometimes people call it resummation or equivalent or certain things. And you go to next leading, then you have to consider this could potentially excited state contribution, and this actually can become significant because they are actually the same, they come in as a constant. And so without multiple separation of this parameter, the differences between the TF and TI, you cannot separate them. So this is an overall constant addition that can move up or move down. So this could be very dangerous, and what we find is really essential to include that. So a lot of our efforts actually been devoting to try to control the systematics. So we have started this calculation in the late 2011 and 2012, and thinking we should be done in a couple of years. And apparently it wasn't the case. So we published a paper on 2015 with lowest statistic about 8K on average in terms of number of measurements. And later, this is what we had earlier this year. We have increased the statistics dramatically because we started to find a lot of issues in terms of statistics. Let me show you some of the examples. So one of the things we find in this, for example, the excited state are systematic. So you assume you tune your operator very well, you only have to worry about the ground state, and that's the orange case is here. Here is showing different example of the actual charge, scalar, and tensor as a function of the separation. So yes, you put farther and farther away, your excited state die faster, and you should just love with the ground state. And I can also try to extract, I can do some smart analysis, say I include into the next leading term, which is this blue dot. I can do this at individual point and to check the consistency. Or I can include it up to this next leading term, which is spent here because you require multiple separation, so you have to do this, use all the input to do it, and that's a great, you got this band. And from this, you say, hey, if I can do the separation up to about one Fermi or so, then I can just use the, I can safely assume I don't have any excited state contamination, which is the case. But if you look at a different lazy spacing of all the same pion mass, and that conclusion's completely draw off because now you see that one state or plateau or various versions of a ratio work, you see this, you can start to see actually there's a discrepancy there. So it's not very safe to assume that you can just do one precision calculation on one ensemble and say you're going to use the same parameter for the rest of your ensemble. Now we have 9 here. So that's not something that you can assume. And in addition, the excited state may not be a single particle. They could be a different kind of state that can go get to the same continuum limit. So on the lattice, it could be more complicated. You could have additional excited state particle continuum and so on. So anyway, the point is, this is it's not so easy, and it's especially much harder for the actual charge. And another way to look at this, if people like to, many of you probably see this many times, is to plot as a Euclidean time, and you have various different separation after you remove the leading order terms. And what you want to see here is all, you can see certain convergence as you go to larger and larger separation, but again, the error bar also go much faster. So unless you really beat down all this, you need more measurement and larger separation, otherwise you can distinguish them, they get much, much bigger. And so this is what we did earlier in about 2,600 measurements, and it seems to be the case. And when we increase in the recent paper in 2016, and as you see the band here is our analysis, and you see they just behave like what they should, which is normal. You assume everything should get roughly the same within error bar string because you increase the statistic, and then you should expect your fit to be about that. So that's true for the tensor, and also roughly true for the input long time ago. And so this is our number later on here.